Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode number 119 for February 7th, 2008. Hey everybody! While we regret that former podcast producer Jeremy Williams chose to leave in order to campaign for Mitt Romney, we doubt we regret it as much as he does. Just kidding. Jeremy Williams is now an official employee of Future US, and he'll be working with us right here in the windy moors of South San Francisco, but no longer as podcast producer. Does anyone know what he got hired to do?
We can't talk about it.
He's going to be doing
it's a secret.
Thing, okay. So. He's going to be doing secret things here at Future US. And so we actually share a wall with his office. So I'm sure we'll hear from Jeremy Williams every now and then.
And we'll be hearing his screams coming from through the wall.
His presence will continue.
His weeping at night.
Continue to be felt in this and future podcasts as we struggle to figure out what he did with the podcast discretionary budget. In the meantime, I'm delighted to introduce you to our new podcast producer. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Andy Bauman. Andy, say hello.
Hello.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm really excited to be doing this podcast. It's my favorite.
Awesome. Andy's joining
us. Who exactly is this guy?
He's joining us from Salt Lake City, Utah.
I'm just a fan,
really,
you know?
Is there really a Salt Lake there, or is that just like a bastardization of Salt Lake City, or what?
Not only is there a Salt Lake, but there's a Great Salt Lake.
Wow. So yeah. What is a Salt Lake?
It's just a huge-ass lake that's salty.
Yeah, it's so, like the highest salt content of any body of water in the world, I think.
Yeah, something like
No. Dead Sea, even?
I don't know.
In the country, certainly.
Yeah, isn't this what Wikipedia is for? I mean, if you jump into the Salt Lake, will you bounce and like you would in the Dead Sea?
Yeah,
like
you would float really well. Yeah.
Wow, you done that, Andy?
You know what? The Great Salt Lake is disgusting. You don't want to go in there.
It's
full of flies and brine flies.
I've been in there. It was not a pleasant experience.
Oh, you went in?
Yeah, my family drove cross country once, and stopped at all these landmarks, including the Salt Lake. And
oh, is that where they tried to drown you?
Yeah, it was a good attempt.
It was a convenient stop,
but you can't drown in the Great Salt Lake.
It was one of their better tries.
The country.
They tried to throw me in the Grand Canyon, and yeah,
and you bounced right back into the car.
Bing, boing, boing. Andy, what's the first PC game you ever played?
You know what? That's going back. I'm going to have to say probably one of those old Apple II games. I don't know which.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, one of those Oregon Trail
green. Is
there a
name associated with this game? Or, you know,
like a Zork or one of those?
I think I was too young, you know, to get into the text adventures back then. Probably, you know, those word games that you play in school, or like Oregon Trail for sure is probably one of the first ones I remember.
Oh, wow. Okay.
How old guy are you, Andy?
Oh, I'm 24.
Okay.
Wow. So wait, you played Oregon Trail when you're 24?
No, back.
Jesus.
Prenatal gaming.
Yeah. Chuck, I'm 27. I played Oregon Trail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have any artificial parts, like a prosthetic arm or a glass eye or anything like that?
No.
No pins in your arm or anything?
No, I'm pretty. I'm not bionic yet.
Okay. Anybody else have? Artificial parts here, plastic stuff in their bodies or anything like that?
None that can be mentioned on the podcast.
Whoa! Alright.
I have a porcelain bone in my finger. I have a fake bone.
A porcelain bone? Now, what happens
it's a piece
if
of porcelain.
You break it? Wouldn't it shatter? Or
do you feel pain?
Never had any problem with it. It's pretty robust.
Was it just for kicks?
My finger was... I lost a finger in an accident and they sewed it back on, but the bone... the bone wasn't recoverable, so they put a piece of porcelain in there instead.
You lost like a whole, how much of a finger?
Like the top half.
Oh my god. Oh, wow.
Okay. But were you able to get like a laser put into it or anything?
Well, I was very lucky that it happened when I was about, I don't know, 6 or 7, and it was the same year that microsurgery became available. on the British National Health Service. So if it happened the previous year, I'd have nine fingers today. But it was very fortunate timing that they had just had this new procedure that they were able to sew my finger back on. It was quite lucky. Well,
and you can feel.
They could have called you Frodo.
I can feel, and it's all good. It's just that if you look closely at it, you can see that it's a bit weird. And if you press down on the top of the finger, you can feel the piece of porcelain in there.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, if this happened at 6 or 7, I mean, isn't it smaller than your other fingers?
No, everything grew back just the same.
It's a new kind of porcelain called grosselin.
Let's look at it this way. I mean, is there any part of Gaz where if you look closely at it, it's not kind of weird?
Yeah, you don't want to be looking too closely at any part in particular.
Actually, Gary, you may want to tell your girlfriend that they have a new procedure where you can take a piece of your bone out of your body and they will culture it to make wedding rings. There's a company that does that. But the thing is, because of the way the law works, you can't have a physician go in there and take a piece out. You have to have it done when you're having some other surgery that necessitates you to expose bone. So I just want to throw that out there.
You can have elective surgery, right? I mean, you could have
Yes, you can. Absolutely. And I apologize, by the way, for using the term exposed bone in the podcast. I promise
there
I won't
There will be
do
no exposing of bones
yeah.
today.
Anyway, that, by the way, was the voice of former editor-in-chief and crisis hater Gary Gaz Whitta.
Correct on all counts.
joining Gary, Andy, and I today, our senior executive editor, Chuck Osborne.
Holla.
Senior associate editor and Sins of the Solar Empire tyrant, Dan Stapleton.
Holla back.
And senior executive intern, Norm Chan.
Happy New Year.
And Wunderkind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a happy new year for our Asian friends. Well, see, I don't know. Is it just Chinese New Year, or does it...
No, it's the Vietnamese Tet holiday today as well.
It's the Lunar New Year.
Lunar New Year, okay.
Lunar New Year.
All right, well, happy new year to our lunar friends.
The friends of the moon.
Hey, some of my best friends are lunar. Anyway, let's get into the news. It's been a big, big, heavy news week this week. For one thing, The Sims 2 has released a very interesting kind of soundtrack. Chuck, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, let me see.
This one's a good one. I don't know how many of you speak Simlish out there, but if you do,
on the surface, it seems pretty innocuous because, games release soundtracks all the time. And normally, an email like this will come into my email and I'll just hit delete automatically. But I actually read this one, and what's interesting about this is that they got international pop star, as they call her, Natasha Bedingfield, to record her new single, Pocketful of Sunshine, for the album, but she did it all in Simlish. And if you go to thesims2.ea.com, you'll actually get to see her recording some of her lines in Simlish, and they play a little clip from the song. I just think it's amazing that they were able to get her to do this.
Now, it's important to note that Simlish is not an actual language. It's
gibberish.
Not according to what she says in the interview. In the interview, she said that she's not just speaking gibberish, that they actually translated her lyrics into Simlish. So there
that
has
may
to
be that may be what they told her. But
can we dig up the lyrics for that song to see what type of words?
I mean, on the other hand,
because on my first
things Amy Winehouse has been saying lately. We're not going to take that at face value here.
My first day on the job here 4 years ago, I went and saw The Sims 2 for Hands On, and I was talking to the producer. They were explaining to me about Simlish, and it is not an actual language. It's just syllables. They didn't want people to try and be able to translate what the Sims are actually saying because they're not actually saying anything. They were avoiding recording dialogue for all the things they might be saying to each other.
But didn't they say that about Klingon at first?
No,
maybe.
No. See, that's different. No.
The way it started,
of course, but then they hired a linguist.
I mean. See,
about
in
the
5 years, Simlish could be spoken by hundreds of countries all around the world. It could unite this world as nothing has ever united us before.
It could be the new Esperanto.
Absolutely.
If I'm not dead of natural causes by that time, I will kill myself.
The point is, though, that someone at EA took her lyrics and put Simlish words, whether they were translations or just things that they made up, in accordance to those lyrics, and they actually got her to sing it.
And I'm going to be the first to say that's awesome.
It sounds like she was being punked.
Now, can we splice some of this into the podcast?
Yeah, should we play some right now? See what it sounds like?
Yeah.
Oh my, okay. Clive. We shot a coup, but shanai gaba, oh my. Sticks a stool and never gaba, shake my. Snoo a somi swai. Oo kid a loo, bet a noo tibba, oo me, oh.
I think we're all getting
sounds
punked.
Like Pootie Tang. Sign your pity on the runny kind.
She said in the press release that it was such a fun and delightful challenge to learn how to sing in Simlish. The language of the Sims captures a wonderful sense of beauty, creativity, and humor, so my song, Pocket Full of Sunshine, translated well.
In stores now, for album.
This goes right along with the Sims 2 Pets tie-in they had with, who was it?
Hillary Duff.
Right.
Yeah, except Hillary Duff was not singing in Simlish.
Well, thank God.
No, she was just actually in the game.
I will certainly be looking forward to hearing that record. There are also other artists, aren't there, on the soundtrack?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of them, actually.
Who else is doing the Simlish business? They might be Giants. Great Northern.
Well, I don't know if they're all recording in Simlish, though. She was the only one that they called out was doing it in Simlish.
Now, just a little side note for the Simlish. Dan Amrick over at OXM had used to do some voice work. And he was telling me once that he did some recording for I think it was one of the mobile Sims games where he did some Simlish for them, so yeah, maybe he's fluent.
So if anyone knows Simlish, it would be Dan Amrick over at Official Xbox Magazine, another fine future U.S. pub.
One of the songs is named Brittany, performed by I'm From Barcelona.
Yeah, I don't
leave Brittany alone, Barcelona.
All right, moving on. Steam has now acquired its 15 millionth user, which I'm assuming means account, which is an astounding number. 15 million of anything. What, how many people are in California? 30 million?
Something like that.
Well, what does it take to create a Steam account? You just download it and you can install it, right? I mean, still, it's a great number. Yeah. But it's not an indication of how many people have bought, you know,
but
a Valve
still,
game
but that's,
or
that's,
a game
that means
Steam.
That, you know, like Steam has opened Steamworks to developers so that they can have a channel to gamers, and this means that there are potentially 15 million people out there who have that channel open, you know, and ready to accept all the gaming goodness you can shovel at them.
Now, I wonder how many people
should probably apply the same standard that Warcraft does, though, and say that, you know, for it to be a valid number, it should be someone that's actually used Steam in the last 30 days. Because many people may have downloaded it and never looked at it again.
But I was just wondering how many people have Steam but have never bought a game off of it.
Well, what's the use of Steam if you don't buy, you know, at least a Valve game?
Well, I mean, but you have to use Steam in order. I mean, if you had bought a game at retail that's a Valve game, then you have Steam.
But I can't imagine. I guess they have some demos on there that you can get for free, and they have trailers and things like that. And maybe if you
there's mods, right?
There are mods, but I think you can only those only really work with like Valve games that you can download that they have on Steam anyway.
It's kind of surprising to see Valve release any sort of number relating to Steam. That's been one of my pet peeves, is that they won't tell us anything about the Steam statistics. So to see them at least saying, well, this is how many people have Steam, I guess maybe that's a positive start. Maybe they'll start
giving us some numbers. I think it probably has something to do with the fact that they're releasing all that back-end software for independent developers. You know, and basically they're saying, look how many people have downloaded this application. This is how many people you can get to. So at any rate, it's a fantastic number, and it's good to know. Just wish we, you know, were hearing a little more inspirational stuff from, I don't know, maybe Microsoft lately.
They love to trumpet how many copies of Vista they've moved, but you know they don't say how many were actually sold individually as opposed to, you know, bundled with a new machine.
Yeah, that would be an interesting number. Another interesting number would be the Duke Nukem Forever release date. Which was recently unconfirmed by no less than George Broussard himself.
Well, it was, okay, so there was a private email exchange between Scott Miller and, who was it now, the Dallas Business Journal. And as occasionally you do with your contacts in the industry, they will tell you something that is off the record. And the Dallas Business Journal decided to quote him on this.
Basically, quoted him saying off the record, right? It was like.
Kind of because he said, you know, well, we can't officially announce this, but, you know, in the gist of the conversation was that we hope to get this game out sometime within next year. And the funny thing about it to me was we may miss the mark by a month or two was in his quote. And it's like, you mean like 200 months? but then George Broussard popped up on the 3D Realms forums and basically said, look, that was all taken out of context. That wasn't meant to be shared with the public. And it's still when it's done.
And he was saying, you know, we're used to dealing with the gaming press where this kind of thing is understood, where, you know, you can tell somebody something and they're not necessarily going to broadcast to all their audience. Lesson learned.
And he said, you know, what was amazing about it is that the Dallas Business Journal thought that we were going to announce the release date of Duke Nukem Forever with them instead of the with the gaming press.
Awesome.
That's pretty funny.
But it does make me regret that I let my subscription lapse last year. I think I'm going to pick that one up again. Yeah. Another in a long line of interesting numbers this week. 1 million copies are being given away for free of, wait for it, Left Behind Eternal Forces.
If you go to their website, and anyone who wants a free copy of it can go to www.leftbehindgames.com/free. It says there, hurry, this offer will not last. It's only available to the first 1 million people who go there and get a copy, so you'd better
absolutely
hurry.
Absolutely free.
Yeah.
And except that it has a small shipping and handling charge of $4.99. So free. Oh, wait. They actually use a specific word. Yeah. So if you go to leftbehindgames.com/free, well, you can download the Left Behind Eternal Forces game for free, $24.95 retail value. But free is asterisked. And if you look at the bottom, it says a shipping or digital download convenience fee will be assessed.
Wow. So they charge you for being able to download it.
Download convenience fee, and that fee is, I believe, $4.99.
Well, so Dan, you actually reviewed this game for us. What did you give it again?
I'll have to look that up. But as a quick side note, what is the analog download fee? Is that more or less?
That's not covered.
No, that's when somebody picks up the phone and goes.
It's very labor intensive. A lot of work.
Carrier pigeon, not covered.
I'm looking up our score.
That would
here
be great if the Gideons started, distributing this at hotels.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, but given that most PC games, you know, don't usually sell anywhere near 1 million copies.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll be running out anytime soon.
Yeah, but most PC games aren't free with a $4.99 digital download convenience fee.
Well, of course.
So you gotta admit that.
I think they're going to have a hard time giving this away. I gave it a
free with a $4.99 convenience fee.
I gave it a 37%. It was not a good game at all. And you know, I'm difficult to offend. But there were some things in this that offended.
You're difficult to offend?
Really?
I'm difficult to offend. I'm a fairly
tolerant
person.
I'm surprised you didn't try to argue with the game.
Well, hey, I can argue with something with somebody without being offended by it. I mean, but, you know, the way it treats women in this game is really kind of...
Oh, right.
Oh, right, because women couldn't be... What couldn't they be? Engineers?
All they could be were like evangelists or nurses, like whereas if you tried to go through the game using only women, you couldn't possibly do it. It's impossible. But using only men, yes, you can, because there are like 6 or 7 professions that you can be, and women can only be 2 of them.
Well, then I mean, who's going to make lunch?
That's a valid question, I suppose, but yeah, it's. It's just, I mean, just the fact they made a conscious design decision to do that is messed up.
Anyway.
Well supposedly they had an expansion pack in the works for quite a while, but it just seems to have completely disappeared.
Did that never even come out? Awesome.
No, because I remember I was, you know, looking for it. I was waiting for them to contact me about it, and I would see it on EB Games website, and they never had like an official name for it listed. It was always just the Lost Behind expansion pack, and then it just kind of disappeared.
Oh wait, they say on the website they went there. Do not be left behind on this fantastic offer. There it is, ladies and gentlemen, from the horse's mouth. So remember, Left Behind Eternal Forces is now free, $4.99 digital download convenience fee. Let's move on. Well, moving on. No nipples in the age of Conan. Chuck, what can you tell me about this breaking news?
You know, people were wondering exactly how Age of Conan, with its excessive gore and, of course, nudity, was going to be handled in the U.S. And so it's finally come to light that the U.S. version is going to be rated M for mature. But what that means is that here in the U.S., we will not see nipples. That will be the only change to the game. Now, in Germany, however, the German version is going to be rated 18+. However, in the German version, it won't have decapitations, dismemberment, or over-the-type fatalities. So all
and
of that is
in
okay
addition
here.
To no nipples.
Over-the-top fatalities.
Right. No, I think the Germans are going to have nipples.
What? No, so which version?
Nipples are fine, but
they can't have the excessive violence.
Right, they just can't have the excessive violence. So that's okay for us. But
I can't
even
buy
nipples,
a box that says
the nipples.
Nipples
just put it right over the top.
Oh, wow. So
which one to choose?
Yeah, exactly.
However, you know, if you live anywhere else in Europe, then hey, you get nipples and gore.
That's intense.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if there's no decapitation, dismemberment, or over-the-top type fatalities, then to quote Aliens, what do you use? Harsh language? I mean...
Well, see, that's weird also, because it says...
You just sort of stab in their direction and...
the quote from their community manager is that the German version has full gore, but will not have decapitation, dismemberment, and over-the-top fatalities. So I'm not sure what happens. Like, you stab someone and their arm falls off. You know,
tis but a scratch.
Yeah. Hang on a second. I'm pretty sure I was pretty sure I had read about this earlier, and I just Googled it, and it seems to be the case. There will be nipples in the U.S. version.
What? When does this happen?
Breaking news.
Google, and I'm just going to say this, Google Conan nipples. And you will find it. Said developer Funcom said that the U.S. version of Age of Conan Hyborian Adventures will not be censored in the USA in a forum post by community manager.
This was an update from yesterday then. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a forum post that said that the U.S. version will censor the topless women, but that was proven to be an error. It is only the German version that will eliminate decapitation, dismemberment, and some fatalities. So... There shouldn't
so there
be any
it.
Censorship.
It is,
freedom
now...
reigns supreme again.
Oh, okay.
USA. However, you know, USA.
Listeners should note that you will need a nipple-enhanced video card to play the game with nipples. Yeah. You will need hardware nipple support.
So. At least bump mapping.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
At the minimum.
Oh, I see. I went up to the line, Norn crossed it. I just want that acknowledged. So there you have it. You will get nipples in your Conan. I wonder if there'll even be a pasty option or something like that, you know, for nervous parents. But hey.
There should be a pasty option for the full decapitations. So, chop off someone's head, but you don't see it. You just see a little pasty.
Just see a sparkling little, you know, going on there.
Okay.
Well, NVIDIA dropped quite a bomb on us this week. By
an N-bomb?
An N-bomb, exactly. That they are purchasing the PhysX developer Aegea, who, as you may or may not know, developed the physics acceleration card that we reviewed a couple years back. That the hardware itself has not really taken off, but the what's called the middleware, which is software that lets game developers put in, you know, add more realistic physics into their games, has done pretty well. So this is, I think, pretty good news for gamers.
Well, what Gia had done was to release that for free to basically compete with Intel's Havoc and allow developers to incorporate their physics technology into their game engines in exchange for supporting the PhysX card, which they hoped would drive sales of the PhysX card, which didn't seem to work. However, they have managed to get NVIDIA to buy them. Which
I do remember when I was talking to AGA years ago, before just before the launch of the card, they were kind of hinting that, you know, we realize the card is going to cost at least $150. I think ended up coming out for $250 and went down to $200, something like that. They kind of were acknowledging even back then that this is a solution that needs to be on a GPU, you know, because add-in card, you know, is not ideal, I think, is the way they put it. So actually, they got to where they wanted to get. So
who knows? I mean, there's no, we don't know where NVIDIA is taking.
Yeah, it's a step closer.
We're assuming that they'll be including the GPUs on the card.
But it's a step for them in the right direction to make this happen. And I'm delighted that there's more competition to Havoc. As much as, you know, I love Havoc effects.
Well, and you've got to have competition or else it's just going to stagnate and not get any better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, plus, AGA, they did have good hardware. I thought it was a great card. It just, they didn't have the games, and that was too bad.
Right. I mean, the problem there was you've got the chicken and the egg thing, because you can't make a game that requires this hardware unless a lot of people have the hardware. Otherwise, nobody's going to buy the game. And you can't make the hardware that doesn't have any games, because nobody's going to buy the hardware if it's not going to do anything in any of the games they have. So, but this solves that problem. And assuming that the next big NVIDIA card that comes out has an integrated physics processor using AGEA's technology, there right away you've got a big install base that has physics acceleration. And then we can start to see games that actually integrate like fancy physics into the gameplay itself, which is something that all the games that have just had, you know, optional physics acceleration with the AGEA card up to this point have not done. They've just added like extra particle effects and things like that, but they can't require it. They can't have it as part of the game.
At this level,
But here's a question though: given that ATI won't have the PPUs on their cards, do you think developers are still going to be, you know, trying to make games with those sorts of physics effects for? You know, for both platforms?
I think they will be much more inclined to now, especially now that NVIDIA has has a lion's share of the market. If ATI starts coming back, then it'll be a problem. But if NVIDIA maintains these dominant numbers for a while, there will be a very compelling argument, especially if maybe NVIDIA will incentivize a publisher or developer to do it.
I think it'll be a long time before we even have to worry about such things. Or, you know, even, I mean, looking at the you know, in the long run, maybe even physics being sort of absorbed into DirectX 10, you know, it might be part of that whole package. You know, anything could happen in the future, but I doubt we'll see any major changes for at least a year and a half.
Well, wait, does Gaz have anything to say about the AGEA?
No.
Okay.
Good riddance.
Okay. So we have some unfortunate news for lovers of the moribund game Myst Online that was on GameTap and no longer will be.
Yeah, unfortunately, it looks like Myst Online, Uru Live, which had gotten, you know, saved by GameTap because it had been canceled before it ever came out by Ubisoft, like, a couple years ago, and then finally was relaunched last year. Through GameTap. Well, I guess it just hasn't been doing as well as you know, people thought it might, and so we finally got the word that the servers are going to be shut down sometime probably within the next 60 days. So if you have not tried it out yet and have been burning to try it out, you'd better hurry.
because we know there are a lot of people out there that have just been itching and burning to play Myst Online Uru Live.
There's no call for that. There's no call for that attitude.
You know, I actually tried it out when it relaunched. I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, I've always been a fan of what they were trying to accomplish with Uru Live. The problem is that just not enough people were playing. So this entire idea of cooperative adventure gameplay just fell flat, because you have to have the people there to help you out and form that community.
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of interested in the first Myst when I was, you know, 13.
Yeah, this has no connection to the original Myst. I mean, it's an entirely different way of playing the game.
So why are they calling it Myst? It's
in third person. I mean, it's kind of like how the original Doom isn't exactly like Doom 3, you know.
Well, it's the same perspective. It's shoot monsters that pop out of closets.
All right. Well, how about Duke Nukem translating?
Okay, just
Duke
like
Nukem
that Reverie.
It's yeah. different.
Right. Right. I'm surprised you didn't use the Fallout example there, Chuck.
You're more of the Fallout fanboy than I am.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. That would have hit home, is what I'm saying.
I mean, the obvious reason why it's called Myst Online is because Myst has that name recognition. I mean, casual game players recognize Myst. It was like bundled with every single PC that had CD-ROM drives in the early 90s, and was like, you know, the best-selling PC games of all time before The Sims.
Yeah,
I just hope this finally means that we are now emerging from the long dark era of Myst.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because I never understood the appeal of it. It was a very gimmicky game, as Norm says. It was kind of a product of the CD-ROM era. When CD-ROM was a new concept.
We're moving into the era of Crysis, so that's great.
Oh.
but seriously, I think you guys are judging like the entire franchise based on the very first game. And it did evolve over a period of time, but I mean, speaking to what you're saying though, Cyan is effectively out of business, I think, at this point. So yes, this will probably be the last gasp of Myst.
Maybe what they should do is give the game away for free, a million copies.
A million copies of it?
with a $4.99 digital download convenience.
Well, I mean, if you were a GameTap subscriber, that's pretty much what they were doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And hey, you know, maybe if women could only solve 2 of 5 kinds of puzzles, that'd be great.
Everybody, I'm giving away my quad-core system at home. All you need to do is give me a $2 million digital convenience fee, and I'll be happy to hand it over to you.
And proportionally, how is it digital? Proportionally, that's... You know, yeah.
Send it over to them online?
Yeah. How are you going to download that?
He's going to get on the phone and screech at them.
I remember somebody telling me once that Myst was so popular with female gamers, who were a huge part of the reason why the game did really well, because it was bought by, you know, this huge demographic of female gamers that didn't usually buy games, that it was popular with them because it was like shopping, that you just, you know, kind of wander around looking at pretty things and acquiring things and you know, all kind of doing it at your own pace and there not being any violence or anything.
Right, I always considered the first Myst to be sort of the coffee table book of video games, because friends would give them to other friends, and then they would sit there and they would look at a couple of pictures, but then they would never actually read it or play through the rest of the game.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I mean, ultimately, those games are either anathema to you. Most hardcore gamers who are used to things, you know, like moving on screen, you know, probably found them very, very boring. I know I did. But like I said, for a lot of people who don't like Twitch and were more casual gamers, it was really a breath of fresh air.
Didn't you like text adventures? I mean, didn't you play those when those were big?
You had. I mean, that's another way to look at the evolution of what Myst was. You had text adventures, and then you had graphic adventures where they introduced graphics at the top of the screen and you had the text below. And then Myst basically just went the whole way and got rid of the text and just became completely graphic. But I couldn't believe it when I first saw it. It was like, oh, so it's just still pictures? Nothing actually moves? And then eventually as the series went on, they did, you know, they made it kind of more free-moving. Mm-hmm. But it was still
also,
it had
great production values. It had great sound. Sound is very important when you're looking at what is admittedly still pictures, you know?
It was very immersive in its own way.
Exactly. And, you know, and I think that was hugely appealing to me. It still is today with a lot of adventure games.
I think
it's not a franchise that many people feel nostalgic about, is it? No one's sitting around going, oh, I wish they'd bring back Myst.
Right. Well, maybe you don't, but I'm sure there's lots of adventure gamers
who probably kept bringing it back and back and back, though, so you don't really have that problem. But I think what left me so uninspired by it, just blanking on the word. I was just so nonplussed about it. Yeah. I was just not that interested in it because the world was just dead. You know, nothing moved, nothing. And it's like the antithesis of Grand Theft Auto 3, you know,
again, they changed that in later episodes. I mean, right.
There was virtually no one to interact with.
Real Myst. Everything was moving around in the back.
The person in the world.
Right.
Do you remember Real Myst, where they took the original Myst and you could play it in real time? And it was such a big thing.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah.
The pre-rendered graphics for now, real time.
Which didn't work, I remember. It was awful. Yeah. It looked horrible.
Robin and Rand Miller are probably living on like a 1,000-acre ranch or something now, because they were coined here. Yeah. When that game was popular.
They're probably bathing in the blood of virgins, even as we speak.
So Myst may be going offline.
Right.
Oh, you know, an online game.
Nice, nice segue, Mr.
Another series
Osborne.
That's still going strong. Come on, you can. This is not
Let's
that different.
Let's hear it for the Osborne. Yes, indeed, the series Call of Duty 4 is now holding a mapping contest for all of you budding modders out there.
Here's the thing. The Call of Duty 4 maps, the online maps, they're really, really excellent. I mean, unlike a bunch of other first-person shooters where the multiplayer component is just an afterthought, and even those that aren't, I think the design of maps in Call of Duty 4 just stand way above, you know, in terms of the level of detail and just how balanced they are, far above the other maps of other shooters, like Counter-Strike or even Half-Life. So I think it's going to be a really tough challenge for the community to create, you know, maps that will have a long-lasting appeal for Call of Duty 4, which is why I'm really excited about this contest.
Yeah, and it's Unreal 3 based, right? So you
No, it's not. It's a proprietary
engine. No, it's not. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So basically, if anybody is interested in taking part in it, you'd want to go to www.infinityward.com/tools. And I believe that the date to get this in is March 31st.
Yes.
That is the deadline.
Get mapping.
And also, I would appreciate it if everybody would not continue to shout Andy down when he's trying to chime in.
Huh?
Huh?
Sarcasm.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. You know, real quick.
Fail.
Speaking of deadlines, I have to give one final shout-out for America's Next Top PC Gamer Reviewer Competition. Little reality TV show experiment
Drum
here
roll,
is
please.
Coming to an end this weekend. So if you have not gotten me your 150-word review of Peggle sent to Chuck at PCGamer.com with the America's Next Top Reviewer in the subject line, then you have until February 11th to do so. After that, February 10th is the deadline. After that, I will no longer be accepting your reviews. So far, I have received over 90 of them. So I would like to say that on next week's podcast, I will have everything whittled down. But I have a feeling that I am still going to be busily reading through a lot of reviews. So
and he's practicing saying terrible in a British accent. We might have to get Gaz to do that.
Yes. Okay, hey, Gaz, can you say terrible for us once?
What do you need it for?
Just say terrible.
But I need to know the context.
He doesn't want to be soundboarded. That's his thing.
That's absolutely the worst review of Peggle I've ever read.
Well, Chuck, I know you've been thumbing through them. Let's start with the basics. How do you gauge the literacy rate of the people?
You know, I'm going to be absolutely honest. I was expecting some terrible, terrible things out of this. And I have been so pleasantly surprised by how many people have really, really, you know, done a great job. I mean, it's 150 words. It's not a lot to work with. You know, it's difficult to review any game in 150 words, but a game like Peggle is especially difficult. And, you know, some people have been incredibly creative. I haven't gone through and read all of them, but I've, you know, kind of like been skimming through them as I've received them. And so far, I've been incredibly impressed. This is going to be a very difficult thing to judge.
One thing that I was really impressed by is just yesterday, the day before, Chuck was saying, "Oh, here's the first person that didn't follow the rules and didn't include a subhead," and you know that's after receiving dozens of
things.
That is
very impressive.
And just the fact that most of the time when I turn in a review, I forget something. I forget to put in like the maximum number of players or the SRB rating or something. But for like everybody but this one poor sap to have everything they need, that's pretty impressive.
Has anybody given Peggle a negative review?
Yes, and you're not being judged, you know, harshly. I mean, I know that most of us, with the exception of maybe one person here, is not a fan of Peggle, but that will not go against you.
You could go the other way. I think as long as you can make your case.
Yeah, exactly. If you can make your case,
given how well Peggle is loved and known to be loved by everyone on PC Gamer, to come out and say, "Well, I don't like it," I think you should get extra points for Moxie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Gaz is just trying to get himself extra points for not liking Crysis. That's what this is about.
So for the last entrance, Chuck, do you have what? Can you think of one sentence of advice you would give based on what you've read so far, on what to do or not to do for, you know, based on what you've seen from everyone who's written in so far? There may not be anything, but if you can think of something,
don't waste words. You know, make every word count. I would have to say that. Go back and reread what you've written. And even say it aloud to yourself.
It's like the game. You don't want to waste your shot.
Right, exactly. I mean, you only have 150 words, so if you're going to go for a joke, make sure it counts.
Go right for the headshots.
Oh, good. Nice. Well, let's move on to a few questions before we talk about our playlist.
Hi, this is Knighthood from England. I was just thinking about it, and surely all the politicians who want to get violent games off the shelves are in for an impossible task. When was the last time you saw a truly next-gen game that was not an FPS or another violent game? Even a game like Peggle could be seen to have illusions of violence with its gun that fires balls. Anyway, just wanted to ask what you thought.
So a game, is he asking about games that aren't violent? That couldn't be construed as violent?
I think he's asking like the last, like, you know, AAA game that wasn't violent. Which, I mean, The Sims is the obvious answer.
That would be considered a mature game?
Well,
I think he's thinking of any game.
Yeah, like you know, top-selling game. Top-selling game that wasn't violent in any way, which is The Sims.
Yeah, and that's those, like, what, five of the top-selling games.
Yeah, they sell like hotcakes, but...
The top-selling game of all time, actually. Yeah.
Although, you can play The Sims violently if you want to. I mean...
Not really.
Well, one of the fun things that I used to do with the first Sims is, you know, maybe coming up with death traps for them.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
you know.
But even that isn't... They're usually not violent deaths. I mean, that there'll be... There are accidental deaths. There are accidental deaths where they'll catch on fire or something like that. But I don't know.
Or imprison them.
Yes. You
know.
Yes.
Right. But starvation is not a violent death. You know, it's not. There's no. You know, actual person on person violence.
In water now, wouldn't you, Clarice?
this is a vengeful god kind of violence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's. There's one big answer for you.
The Roller Coaster Tycoon games as well. I mean, one of the things that they didn't do in those games was making it so that when you had a crash, you know, you didn't see bodies splaying out and everything. And they did that with all the games, I think, with the entire series.
Which makes actually Roller Coaster Tycoon less violent than actual roller coasters.
Oh, absolutely.
You do see bodies fly everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess the answer is no games that any of us are interested in.
Oh, hey, I like Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah, I guess any racing or sports game is also would also be in that category. You know, just any game based on a real world activity that isn't violent.
And you know what other game? Uru Online. You won't be killing anyone in there, now will you, Dan?
He won't be doing anything in there.
Well, that's true.
So let's take another question.
Hey guys, this is Brian Jensen again. I beat Crysis this week, and it was all right. I enjoyed it, but it was really basic, and I wanted to let the British dude know that I do think it's kind of an original, but do you guys agree with me when I think that the aliens look like they were ripped right out of the Matrix? All right, hope I get good answers from you guys. All right, Larry. But
hey, the British dude.
Basic.
Hey, British dude.
I'm the British dude.
You think it was basic? How was it basic?
I don't see exactly how it was basic. But really, the only question they asked was, do we agree that the aliens were ripped out of the Matrix? Which, I guess, they're kind of like that.
There's some similarities. Like, I mean, is he talking about...
The Matrix and the aliens from Independence Day. I thought that's what they looked like, a combination ripoff.
Right. I mean, let's be honest here. When was the last time you saw an alien that doesn't have some resemblance to an alien you've seen in something else? And I don't think it's all that fair to you know, criticize a game for not having like totally original aliens.
Personally, I'm just glad that they didn't do the Starship Troopers, you know, insect aliens, because those have been so overdone lately.
Right.
I was also disappointed by how much of the... I know there's changes later in the game, but how much of the early game
on the island just looks exactly like Far Cry. It's the exact same kind of terrain.
I think it's the same syndrome. Remember when Greg was
tropical talking about jungles and mountains? Somebody actually did a comparison online where they posted a bunch of screens of Crysis and a bunch from Far Cry, and it's like the same game.
Well, but I mean, like any Call of Duty game, any World War II game is of the same. It looks like the same game, but that's because it's the same setting. I don't see the problem.
I just thought it was interesting, especially considering that there's another company doing an actual sequel to Far Cry with Far Cry 2, and Crysis is not related to that. This is an original game. They would have made an effort to make it look different, but it just looks the same.
But Far Cry 2 is going to be set in Africa.
That's kind of ironic, isn't it, that Crysis, which is an original IP, looks more like Far Cry than Far Cry 2 will.
Well, but I think one of the reasons that Ubisoft may be doing that is because they knew that Crysis was going to have that jungle setting.
Or maybe just because they said, hey, let's do something original. Let's make the sequel a bit different.
Well, that as well. I mean, they wanted to go to a different locale that was just as exotic and interesting as the original jungle location.
I'm just confused here. Have there been an excessive number of Tropical Island games? Are we sick of that setting? Because there was one game.
Yeah, there was Far Cry and Crysis.
Yeah, are we sick of that setting because there was one game like several years ago? I don't get it.
Well, I think people would have said it looked like Far Cry no matter who it comes from. It just gets additional attention considering it's from the same developers. It looks a little bit better, but it didn't run as well.
Well, Far Cry didn't run so hot on maximum settings when that came out either. So
it did.
And yeah, let's not get into that. But I'm just talking about the setting. I mean, the setting is relatively fresh in terms of first-person shooter games. I don't understand the criticism that, oh, it looks like Far Cry, so I don't care. Far Cry looked great, and Far Cry played great. I just don't get it.
If you've got a problem with that, let me give you our address. You just show up any day.
I mean, the point is that it is not, and I know, Gary, you probably will disagree with me on this, but I was simply wowed when I first played Crysis, as is evidenced by my score, and I did not feel at all that it was Far Cry Redux. You know, I didn't feel like it was the same game, again, with slightly better graphics.
You know, I actually really disliked the last third of the game, and I am still floored by everything I played up until that minute. It was amazing. And did I ever think for a moment, you know, oh, I'm playing Far Cry again? Not at all. Not once. So there. So we had a reader email us about Flight Sim equipment. Actually, we've been receiving a number of emails on the subject. So we thought we'd bring in Andy Mahood, our resident Flight Sim columnist and expert, to give you his recommendations on Flight Sim equipment. Andy, take it from there.
Hi, folks. Andy Mahood here, your friendly back of the magazine Sim columnist. Logan and Chuck asked me to chime in with some joystick buying recommendations for the podcast listeners, so that's what I'm here to do. Joysticks have come a long way in the past decade, but finding a good fit is still a sliding scale. If you're a casual flyer, someone who just likes to tool around in Microsoft Flight Sim every once in a while, you'll probably be perfectly content with any name brand $50 flight stick. Just make sure it has a built-in throttle and a twisting rudder axis, because without that rudder, your plane will be a bitch to land. Serious flight simmers will probably want something a little sexier, like Satex X52, which comes with a separate throttle body that's got all kinds of handy knobs and buttons. And really hardcore flyers likely won't settle for anything less than a full hot ass setup, complete with flight stick, throttle, and rudder pedals. Hot ass, by the way, means hands-on throttle and stick. If you don't mind cluttering up your desktop and you've got an extra $300 or $400 kicking around, then CH Products and Thrustmaster's Cougar line are the best on the market right now. Also, if you like flying big passenger jets, you might want to check out Satex's new Pro Flight Yoke and Pro Throttle Quadrant. These are exceptional controllers for any general aviation sims. Personally, unless I'm playing a really complex sim like Falcon 4 Allied Force, I can get by just fine with any name brand $50 twist stick, something I can move out of the way real quick when I need my desktop back. If you stick with established names like Satex and Thrustmaster, you'll do just fine. Hope this helps, and happy flying, and or bombing, and or crashing, or whatever you like to do.
Okay, now if that wasn't a clip and save moment in the podcast, then I don't know what is. Wow. Okay, let's move on to playlists. This week for me has been still cleaning up all the loose ends I left from the last half of 2007. Now I'm on to Rainbow Six Vegas, having a very fine time with that. Chuck, how about you?
Well, I've been playing the third episode of Sam and Max for the second season. It's called Night of the Raving Dead. Having a good time with it so far. It will be released on Wednesday, February 13th. So if you're an adventure fan looking for the next episode, get it next week. And then yesterday we played in the office some TF2. I haven't played TF2 for a while, so I need to practice.
And I have been playing Sins of a Solar Empire until my eyes bleed. Norm and I have just been completely addicted to it. Actually, a couple nights ago, I just went home after work and just collapsed at like 7:30 and slept until the following morning at about 7 a.m.
Wasn't there more to that story?
Well, I'd been up the previous several nights playing Sins until like 2 or 3 in the morning, so.
Yeah, I know, but wasn't there, like, cream sherry involved or something like that?
Whoa, cream sherry. What kind of guy drinks cream sherry? We won't get into that.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Norm, what have you been playing lately?
I'm playing Sins of a Solar Empire right now, or I would be if I could, if we would finish up this podcast.
Oh, Gaz, what's going on up there?
Well, Dan was able to furnish me with a download code for Sins of a Solar Empire, so I recently... downloaded that, and I'm gonna start playing it. I was a bit underwhelmed by the opening cinematic, but I'm not gonna hold that against it.
And, the opening cinematic has nothing to do with the game.
Oh, well, that's a good thing, isn't it? Why wouldn't you make the opening cinematic have something to do with the game?
Well,
let's do a cinematic that has nothing to do with the game you're about to play.
I thought it was cool that they did it on Simlish, though. That was.
The opening cinematic has all this backstory, and they do have a bunch of fiction on the website and things like that. But once you get into the game, it's got very little to do with anything you're actually going to play, because it's very much like Civilization, where the AI might have different personalities, but it's got nothing to do with like actual history, and just like this game has nothing to do with the actual history of the backstory of the three factions.
And Andy, what have you been up to lately?
I just got finished playing your guys' RPG of the year, The Witcher. And
oh, all right.
Fantastic game. Who did the review? Was it Deathlock?
That was Deathlock, yes.
Yeah. He was spot on, I think. Everything about it was super epic. I really enjoyed the sort of adult nature of the game, but it was all, it was also very, very, heavy. Not, it's still a game, so it's still a lot of fun.
Do you feel shorted because, you didn't get to see nipples?
Well, I secretly went to gogamer.uk and imported the UK version.
Wow. Oh. Hardcore. Very Whoa. Nice.
I wasn't going to play a game with no nipples.
The Bouching Bow Wow.
Yikes.
I like him already.
Norm, did you want to say anything about the server?
Oh, yes. And once again, we have our TF2 server, which is running 24/7. The IP address changes occasionally, but the web address is always the same. So if you launch Steam and go to your servers page and you add favorites or add a server, it's pcgmaxpc.nuclearfallout.net. And you can find us there playing occasionally. And also, special announcement... next Tuesday, or we'll have more details about this on the PC Gamer podcast website and the PC Gamer blog, but we will be playing our highly anticipated grudge match against PCG UK in Team Fortress 2.
This is huge, people.
So we're going to release some info about Source TV for spectators, and we'll definitely be recording the match for podcast listeners to download.
Before we go today, I'd like to quickly recount a story I read in the newspaper some years ago. This guy had been driving at high speeds on a little used section of freeway when his car spun out of control and rolled. Maybe the squirrels got him. Who knows? Anyway, he'd been listening to 80s go-go fancy lad sensations Wham on a cassette tape. Now, we've got enough information by now to conclude that maybe he got what he deserved, but it gets worse. He was uninjured but immobilized by the seat in his overturned car under a blazing desert sun for 8 hours before he was spotted by another driver who called for help. And during the entire time, he was forced to listen to that Wham tape playing on infinite repeat for 8 hours. Remember, these Wham are the guys who recorded Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, and that was considered at the time to be the good song on their record. It's a miracle that whoever found the guy didn't stop, get out of the car, here, wake me up before you go-go, and hightail it back into the car and drive away. Anyway, the guy later told reporters, I never, ever want to hear that album again. Now, I'd like to think that the PC Gamer podcast is of fine enough quality that you'd like to listen to it on a loop for 8 hours. I'd like to think that some of our listeners actually do just that, but without the car drama. Still, every now and then, you need a little change of pace, a little excitement, something fresh and new. And in the following weeks, that's exactly what you're going to get. You can look forward to hearing from columnists like Deslock, special guest stars, including our own Andy Mahood, and hey, maybe even another round of everybody's favorite gaming quiz show, Cat Fantastic. Hey, I'm just saying maybe. And don't forget that you, yes you, can be a part of this exciting podcast by sending your questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337, extension 724. Once again, that's 877-404-1337, extension 724, and record your question there. Remember to keep it brief, clean, and packed with compliments on my hosting skills. You can also be part of the insanely fun PC Gamer family by subscribing to PC Gamer Magazine. Just head on over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is Logan Decker saying thanks for listening, and don't forget to bring a date to next week's Valentine's Day podcast. So that's what
that wasn't scripted.
Norm is so anti-script. Have you noticed
I'm
that?
Very anti-script. No, I'm
by getting started, we will shut down Sins of the Solar Empire.
No, that's the point. The point is we're going to play while we do the podcast.
Then who's going to be talking? I don't like
we'll
that.
We'll be talking.
See if you can do it.
Well, I enjoyed. Okay, hold on. Let me think. No. So we bid a some of us not so fond farewell to the Myst series.
Fail.
I saw the Myst, which was interesting, but later I picked up Colored before.
No.
That was a good segue.
Gary was just dropped.
Yeah, we just dropped Gary.
Gary, come back.
We didn't drop him, he dropped us.
Well, something happened.
Maybe he got bored.
We can't quit him.
Too soon.